Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Captain Cook, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That, by the way, is Australian for inspecting something or to have a look.
It's like Australian rhyming slang.
Exactly. Have a Captain Cook, according to CNN Travel, in apparent honor of the first Brit to map Eastern Australia.
And then getting killed, having a look. At some folks that he'd pissed off over a period of years.
Yeah. So the stewards did some inspecting to one car before disqualifying them. Who will it be?
Whoa.
I'm Drew Scanlon. Joining me, Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
Good. I like that cold open. It's like people, we looked at the statistics and people keep leaving within the first 10 seconds because they're like, wait, is this podcast racist?
Also joining us, Rob Sagney. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the fact that we're opening on cliffhangers now. It's a good evolution.
It's sweeps week. If you are new to this podcast, a very warm welcome to you. And if you are new to Formula One itself, we have got an episode just for you. Our preseason primer assumes no prior F1 knowledge and explains how the sport works, who everybody is, and all that stuff. So if you want to go back and listen to that and get up to speed, that's episode 178. Also, the show is supported entirely by our audience over at patreon.com/shiftf1, where every month we release bonus podcasts and videos exclusively for our patrons that cover racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with other racing series, and a lot of weird things. So if you would like to support the show and get access to all of that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What do we have going on this month, Danny?
We are rounding out our review of Drive to Survive Season 4. We already have Part 1, which covers the first 5 episodes. Part 2 will be getting recorded this week, and we'll have it up probably early next week. So you can watch along, or watch and then listen, or just listen and don't bother watching, whatever you want. And of course, thank you to all of our incredible 2022 title sponsors: Tanner McCleave, Bulgarian Bonbon, Mickey's O.O, N at NF1T_NFTs, Olivia Evans, Team Blackjack, Christian Horner, Pyrites Card Castle, Erica Siegel, Iron Station Studios, Alan McCary, TelemetryDeck.com, Gnarly Goat, David Mule, Drew Stewart, Big Promble Motorsports, Bailey Foot, Abdallah Althani, Jason Chadwick, Abraham Getchell, Bunny Thorpe, Octocrimes, Sniggs, Alex Goucher, Reagan, Max Valtar, Circuit Demon, Troy Stammer, Umberto Roca, William Rumpf, and Jason Kelly. Our car is full of names.
Wow. Yeah, it's like a stock car over here with so many stickers on it.
Big M&M's on it and everything.
That's right. Well, let's jump right to it, folks. The Australian Grand Prix. Here's your grid. Charles Leclerc on pole position by nearly 0.3 over Max Verstappen.
Yeah, he kept that in his back pocket a little bit. They had good pace all weekend, but not that much.
Right. Good for Verstappen. Because Q3 was a little treacherous, which we'll get to in a second. Max Verstappen, his car also was being worked on the grid on race day. Don't really know what that was about, but perhaps related to something that happens later in the race. Sergio Perez will start third ahead of Lando Norris. McLaren back near the top this time, ahead of both of the Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton in fifth, George Russell in sixth. And then Daniel Ricciardo, finally a strong qualifying showing. in front of his home crowd, or getting to at least show his papaya colors in front of Australia for the first time in 3 years. Esteban Ocon is in eighth. Carlos Sainz is in ninth. He had a miserable Q3 after looking strong in practice. His car apparently wasn't starting correctly in qualifying, so he missed the window to do his first run. And then Fernando Alonso, who lines up 10th, was on an absolutely blistering lap in Q3, having gone fastest in Sector 2, and then in the middle of a turn, runs out of hydraulic pressure, can't stop the car, which causes him to drift over the gravel and into some barriers.
Red flag.
That brought out a red flag, and so that also kind of messed with Carlos Sainz's day, because he managed to get out with one more run in the remaining time, but again his car wouldn't start, so he wasn't able to do proper warm-ups, and had a much slower time than his teammates.
Yeah,
so
he was on the start finish straight when the red flag kicked. And the red flag ends the race. It voids a lap if you're on one. You can't just yellow flag, you know, just...
it pauses it, because they restarted the Q3, but there just wasn't enough time for him to do it again.
Right, but it just means that, yeah, but the time that he was on, it wasn't as if, like, you know, you hit those waved yellows and you just kind of keep your foot on the gas. It's if he doesn't make the line and a red flag pops, it's not counting. So, the continuation of a bad weekend for him, which seemingly never ended.
Yes. Pierre Gasly will line up just outside the points, or outside the top 10 in 11th place, followed by Valtteri Bottas, Yuki Tsunoda, Zhou Guanyu, Mick Schumacher in 15th. Then we've got Kevin Magnussen, and then Sebastian Vettel. Oh boy. Speaking of misfortune, the entire Aston Martin team this weekend, Sebastian Vettel had an engine problem in free practice one, and that brought out a red flag. So he just took a scooter, Danny.
Yeah, he did. He just decided to wave at the fans and kind of wear a helmet in perhaps the most dangerous way possible, which is the sort of like... just on the top
up
of your head.
Where a headband would go, yeah.
Might be worse than not wearing a helmet. I there's an argument there, probably. But yeah, he got fined quite a lot of money, €5,000 and change.
Damn, I hope he's all right.
Several. I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure he didn't care. Sure, a little bit of levity during his week. Yeah, he broke a couple of rules. You can't have a non-racing car or non-allowed car.
Yeah, he drove
it
on the circuit. It's not like when you hop over and a marshal takes you back to the pits, you know, by the stands or whatever. He drove it on the track, which is really
on the track. Which there could be, other obviously on another weekend there might be another racing series on, but equally support vehicles would go out often after a race to do stuff, so they mightn't expect a, you know, fairly slow little scooter flying around. He also didn't take a marshal with him, which is another thing that you're not allowed solo, apparently, on one of those bikes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if there's a delineation between, like, they have to drive or you can drive. I'm not sure. Maybe you can just have a marshal with you as a buddy. But Vettel clearly not wanting to take the marshal's life in their hands as well on the track. So, but we did get a lot of look, mom, no hands going around turn 11, I think. So that was quite cool.
Sebastian Vettel then sat out free practice two, again, probably due to car issues, then had a crash in free practice three. So the team was rebuilding his car during qualifying. Stroll also crashed in free practice three, but his damage wasn't as significant. So he did get to start qualifying.
Can we talk about that crash?
Yeah, one second. Vettel only managed to start qualifying thanks to more time given to his mechanics. As a result, Danny, of the red flag brought out by his teammate.
I should have known not to interrupt his flow. He knew exactly where he was going with that. I forgot.
In it, baby.
I forgot. That was the whole thing, was that while, at least on the commentary I was watching on the international broadcast, they were saying, oh, it's a shame. They really tried with Vettel's car, but they're simply just not going to get it out. And they cut from his car, garage, to the crash, which then ultimately led to there being enough time for him to get out. In the moment, I was kind of threw my hands up at Latifi and went, you absolute pillock, you've done it again. You've just created a crash where no one else would seemingly allow a crash to happen. he let why do I keep Lance Stroll past? I always want to say Lando Norris. He let Lance Stroll past on like turn the entrance to turn five, thinking that maybe he was on a fast lap, not really knowing. Also, Zhou Guan Yu was coming behind him, I believe. And he let him pass, but Stroll had finished his lap, I believe. So he wasn't on a fast lap going up, trying to get tires, heating the tires, whatever. Latifi was. So then Latifi attempted to overtake in a sort of a weird spot, like kind of up the inside of that little shaded area. Stroll either trying to get out of the way for Zhou Guan Yu or just drifting to the non-racing line of the track to allow someone past. Basically, sort of close the amount of available space to Latifi. They both crashed. Latifi very hard. Stroll had enough damage to his car though that he couldn't continue. They penalized Stroll for it. He got some sort of penalty for it. Latifi
did not get penalties.
Yeah. So it felt to me like maybe an accident that was only possible with those two. Like there was a lot of people, you know, talking about Stroll's history of not looking in his mirrors. I think you can sort of apply that one to a lot of people if you look at enough crashes. But it did seem like the type of crash that like Latifi gets into. Kind of like it reminded me of the Mazepin one at Imola, where you're just like, this guy, he just like puts his car in places that he shouldn't and then stuff happens.
Yeah, I just like, to me it was one of those things where however they ruled, like that it's, you know, technically Stroll's the one who did something wrong there. It's like, it really did feel like both parties had to work hard to create an incident where none had to happen. Like, I do not understand, like, why Latifi is pulled off to the side there and then immediately decides, oh, I'm just going to go and get back around Stroll. Like, instantaneously, he sees the Stroll's on a different pace and decides, like, okay, well, I'm just going to shoot past him. If I'm Stroll, I don't think he's going to do that, because why would he? He just let me by. So why is he trying to like shoot this little gap as we go around this corner? And it is like the fact that you had the Alpha in there as a wild card does complicate this a bit, because like Stroll, you know, supposedly is maybe looking to make space for another car to come through that does have pace on both of them. But yeah, it just overall, the entire thing seemed like guys making really poor decisions out there. Real lack of track awareness and like instinct or anticipation. And honestly, like, talk about a cursed weekend for Aston, really. Like, can you imagine being a mechanic?
Oh my gosh.
At Aston, and like you moved heaven and earth to get this car out, and immediately just wrecked in a blue flag incident, just completely needlessly. And then, you know, the rest of the weekend happens, the race. Like, it's just seems like I am glad I don't work there.
Yeah. It was a rough weekend, for sure.
It also seemed, this incident seemed to me, it's something I think about when I'm on the freeway a lot and I see people doing stupid things. Like, the thought that goes through my head is, with your actions, you have put a lot of faith in me not to be an idiot. And I don't know that you should be doing that.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, no, every motherfucker who darts through traffic on a highway is basically like gambling that everyone else is going to save them from them being a dumbass. Like, it's absolutely infuriating, because like you can see those people coming and you're like, I just have to be aware this guy's going to try to shoot a gap to get around me. And I'm just going to prepare for that because he's not going to stop.
Or like no one's going to break, you know, randomly at any time. All those people who like lane dodge and tailgate at the same time. And you're just like assuming nothing's going to happen anywhere that's going to lead to a crash. Yeah, I was looking at it going like, does Latifi do that on Hamilton? You know what I mean? Like, first of all, it was, like you said, it was dumb for him to leave him pass. And then immediately I realize, oh, wait, no, that wasn't who I was supposed to leave past. I'll immediately fix that. But like, I also thought, like, is he just doing this because it's Stroll. Like, he's just like, I'll just get past him.
It did feel like guys down in, like, the junior varsity category of F1. Right. Like,
fellow Canadians.
Yeah, and, like, and the fact they're both effectively pay drivers does not, like, help this at all, right? Yeah. Where it's, like, it's, I think maybe each of them sees the other as his Wario. And, like, the truth is, you're both, like, the Waluigis of F1, maybe. But we'll see. Well, the Waluigi of F1 is no longer here. So maybe they are both Warios. But, yeah, the point is, though, that it did feel like maybe guys who are in the same class of competitor,
right,
are both kind of insecure about their place in the sport, scrapping it out at a moment where there is no scrap required.
Mm. Also, I'd just like to point out here that the tire rubber came off of, I think, one of Latifi's wheels. And I don't know, you guys tell me, I just feel like I've been seeing more and more tires come loose, which they're not supposed to do, even in low speed incidents like this. And although the drivers do have the halo, spectators and marshals do not.
Hold on. Mm. Did it fly off?
It, like, someone's tire unwrapped from the wheel rim and, like, trundled along next to the crash.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't spot that either.
Yeah, because what I remember was the way his rear left, like, whipped up into the fuselage, which was kind of alarming. Yeah, like, the tires seem so much heavier this year. I do wonder if they are under stress, making escapes more readily, or having more dramatic outcomes from incidents. But yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Nicholas Latifi eventually will line up on the grid 18th after Stroll's 3-place grid penalty. He'll go into 19th, and then Alex Albon. Okay. Yeah, Alex Albon qualified 16th. But curiously, stopped on track after the end of Q1, the reason for which may be explained by what happened after, which was a disqualification from qualifying for not having enough fuel in the car for the stewards to test. So not only is he disqualified, he also got a 3-place grid penalty for his collision with Stroll in Jeddah. So he is as far back in the field as you could possibly be in 20th.
Yes, but his teammate's Nicholas Latifi, so by the end of the race, he'll be 5 places ahead of him.
All right. Well, we shall
Latifi
see.
Latifi can't be around this next year. It's just stupid now. Just, like, for goodness sake, get someone
He's
else
got
in
money.
That race seat. I know, yeah. But
does he have more money than Darlington Capital?
Maldonado won a race, all right? That's all I'm going to say. There's paid drivers, true. And then there's paid drivers.
It's true. All right. Shall we take it through the start of the Australian Grand Prix, Denny O'Dwyer?
Absolutely. Lights out, away they went. Good start from Charles. Good start, decent start, let's say, from Max. Very good start from Checo, which we have seen multiple times
too
now.
Good, in fact.
Yes, it's too good. It's become a sort of a kiss of death almost, because if you put yourself in a position where you're not just, you know, easily holding, you know, behind your so, you know, your teammate ahead of you, who you're less likely to do a sort of a crazy lunge at, sometimes you can get put in an awkward position. And once again, Checo was, the second time this has happened to him this year. He sort of attempted to maybe find some space alongside Verstappen, then ultimately had to get back into position. As he did so, the gap that he left by creating that space, by trying to close the space on the other side, Hamilton flew into. Hamilton had a good start as well and basically passed him by turn two, just on that little first little sector there. A couple of notable bad starts in there as well. Lando Norris had a tricky start. The McLarens obviously qualified quite well. He's still not very happy with the car. Says that it's the same car they drove in Bahrain, but this is just a better circuit for them because it's just more flat out. Mm. But he had a bad start. But the worst start of the lot by far was Carlos Sainz, who just went tumbling down the order. I think by the end of lap one, he was somewhere around 14th. Compounding problems with him on this weekend. Doesn't seem to get a break. But aside from that, pretty clean through that, you know, what is a fairly tight opening two corners. They've obviously opened them a little bit, which is good because these cars aren't small. But there was a lot of the same. I would say the only difference on this lap one is that we've had a lot of the cars driving close to each other these past three races in a way that is quite exciting to look at. And mm-hmm. then we've seen overtaking as a result of that as we got down into braking zones and stuff. The difference here there was that they were all driving again quite close to each other, which was really exciting. But even with these track changes, perhaps because of these track changes in some parts, there wasn't really much overtaking. It's always been a narrow circuit, hard to overtake here. And with the removal of some of the harder braking zones, maybe that stopped an overtaking opportunity earlier in the race. It definitely created one that was easier later down sector two. And worth mentioning as well, something changed that happened before the race. We talked about those four DRS zones they were going to have this year. Drew pointing out this is the first time that they ever had four DRS zones. They decided to change it like 2 days before or the day before practice started. They removed the fourth DRS zone in favor of in just having three. So they removed the third one, did they?
No, I think they removed the fourth one, but it was actually during the practices.
Oh. Oh, was it during practice?
Yeah, because they were seeing, they were seeing things they didn't like in practice, like that it looked like that might be dangerous.
Dangerous, yeah.
Which, you know, I can see, and probably good on them for getting ahead of it. It seems like maybe it was particularly exaggerating the porpoising, which we didn't talk about, but the in-cars really did dramatize this weekend.
Ferrari's was really bad.
Yeah.
Like Williams looked like how? Oh, that Williams. Yeah. I was thinking Russell. Mercedes. Says, Mercedes. But yeah. Mercedes looks like hell to drive. But even the Ferraris, which have pace, it looks unbelievably violent.
I'm starting to worry about that. Remember the thing we talked about before about the micro concussion thing?
Stop thinking about it watching the race, what you'd said, because it just seems bad. And the other thing is this, you know, the micro concussions, but also I think there's also like a growing body of research that that kind of repetitive stress is actually really bad for spinal injury.
It's like forwards in rugby. It's like the guys involved in like the mall or in rugby is all these guys have compressed. They lose like half an inch off the spine over the course of their careers because they're constantly doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different thing, but like, like if this is a temp, this has to, hopefully this is a temporary thing. Like if we're still talking about porpoising a couple of years from now, I'm going to start really worrying about it.
I mean, they're going to get a handle on it because it costs them pace, right? Like Mercedes was running a sensor setup on Hamilton's car to try and figure out like what is going on, because like they're already having to run at less optimal setups because of it, but they also don't fully understand it. But it is costing them pace, and like you can sort of see how it unsettles the car at key turns. And it's causing the drivers to lose pace. So the teams will get a handle on it because it's costing them performance. But yeah, I do question, can they really afford to wait a full season to get a handle on this? If even teams that have like come to grips with the issue to an extent, like Ferrari, it still looks like a really punishing drive. I feel like... Does it seem that bad with Red Bull, or does Red Bull seem like they basically solved it? It wouldn't surprise me. Like, Newey's a genius, and he worked in the ground effects era.
Yeah, it didn't look nearly as bad as every time
I certainly haven't been pointing it out.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, those Ferrari and Mercedes cams were just, like, one of the few times I'm like, man, I'm glad that I don't have this job. This doesn't look fun.
Yeah, and you're right, Rob. If anyone saw during the race, what looked like a white or yellow light underneath the nose of the Mercedes, that is a ride height sensor. They're still gathering data even during the race. Worth pointing out that Carlos Sainz was one of the ones on the hard tire, along with Fernando Alonso, Kevin Magnussen, Sebastian Vettel, Lance Stroll, and crucially, Alex Albon, and they were having a hard time lighting that one up. But lap two, indeed, Sainz cannot get the car stopped at turn 9, I think, and goes onto the grass, which at that point is like ice, and then skids over the track and into the gravel, resulting in a quick safety car. Magnussen would do the same thing on lap 17, but managed to keep it out of the gravel. So that one was a tricky turn. Under the safety car, only Stroll pits, and I thought this was interesting. He went from hard to medium, then did another lap under the safety car, then pitted and went back from medium to hard, thus satisfying the requirement for two race compounds.
That was funny.
Which seemed inexplicable until we saw the Albon strategy play out. Time I was like, boy, they really don't know what they're doing down at Aston, but like maybe they did. Like it was the sort of the inverse of what they would end up trying at Williams, which is the like hard is where we want to be. We just need to satisfy the requirement. But at the time, it seemed perplexing, and like maybe another Aston Martin he was stepping on rakes.
YOLO Swaggins, man, just do whatever we can. Let's just give it a go.
Vettel also had a trip into the gravel as well on lap 11. He just couldn't get the car turned. And, you know, granted, due to COVID and, you know, his crashes, he's only really had a handful of laps in the
car. It's true. He's had, like, I think he had before quali, he had like 30 minutes in the car or something. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, like all season. So, yeah, he said the car is hard to turn under. I forget how he said it, but yeah, it was just like judging the breaking point is hard under brake loading. I think it was. Yeah. So he was just struggling. They were all kind of struggling. Even the turn nine stuff was funny. You don't often see drivers miss that one, but I guess it's different this year too, because they're carrying a bit more speed into it. So maybe those braking zones are that much more tight, right? If you brake at 60 miles an hour, you brake at 70 miles an hour, it's an extra like 40 feet or something. Maybe that's maybe that compounds for F1 speeds as well.
Lap 22, a good little scrap for 10th place between Ricardo, who had just come out of the pits, Stroll, and Albon, who hasn't yet pitted at this point, and has vaulted up to 11th place. Albon tries to take Ricardo on the outside of a right-hander, but it doesn't work, and he loses momentum and a position to Stroll behind him. One lap later, in more pit-instigated drama, Hamilton rejoins ahead of Perez. Hamilton in 5th, Perez in 6th. Who makes a great move on the outside of the long left-hander to pass Hamilton. And while Hamilton looks like he's about to take the position back, we get another safety car.
Yeah.
Because Sebastian Vettel has had even more trouble.
The Perez-Hamilton one is interesting because it goes to show that even in a place like Australia, where overtaking is difficult, the odds are if you're on fresh rubber that you're going to get overtaken if someone's close to you. Like
out of the pits.
Yeah, like the overcut, undercut, the strategy there definitely feels a lot different to last year. You do not want to be stuck that close to somebody on your cold tires. But yeah, Vettel just loved the moped. He couldn't get enough of that moped. He just wanted to keep crashing and having a couple more spins on it.
Yeah, just kind of loses it over a curb, a lot like Schumacher did in the last race, which propels him straight into a wall, snapping off his front wing. Again, cannot imagine being a mechanic for Aston Martin this weekend. Russell, the last of the front runners to not have pitted, uses this safety car to his advantage to lose less time than usual and comes out in 3rd place. So on the restart, lap 25, Leclerc in front.
That's where we also had the, I don't know if we talk about it an hour later, but the Mick Schumacher Sonoda almost crash under safety car.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
That was, Rob, you were saying you had some thoughts about the speed of the safety car. On the straight, basically, Sonoda was doing brakes and all that sort of stuff, and Schumacher got very close to crashing into the back of him, just avoided him by basically going up the inside. The stewards had a look at it, I think because it was technically overtaking under the safety car, but they didn't give him anything. But yeah, you were saying there's been a sort of a rising tide of questioning about the speed of the safety car, Rob.
Yeah, and like usually I don't bring this up because like the drivers you hear every year on the radio them complaining about the speed of the safety car, but particularly after this race, it seems like people are starting to raise that a little more seriously. Like, it seems like people are not blaming Mick or Yuki for that near miss. It is that the pace being controlled from the front is kind of uneven. And so this was a place where Mick, under ordinary circumstances, should be expecting the traffic to be picking up pace as it heads down the straight there. But because everyone at the front is observing the 10 car length gap between them and the safety car, I want to say, that distance isn't opening up quickly enough, and so traffic just kind of stalls out behind the safety car. The other thing is, and maybe it's always been like this, is just more pointed because the tires are different now. Drivers up and down the grid are complaining that they have no temperature in their tires after these restarts. Like, Leclerc was talking about the fact that, like, it was there was lack of like heat in the tires, and then he had a little bit of like debris on his tires after this restart, and was completely like bogged down because the car basically couldn't turn.
Yeah, crazy.
So yeah, there's a few people who are, you know, pointing out that it seems like the safety car might be actually creating slightly unsafe conditions, both when they're keeping pace behind it, and then also on these restarts.
Right.
Which, you know, I don't know what the fix there is. By all accounts, the safety cars are going at pretty much a pretty rapid clip for a sports car of that class.
And it still has to be safe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It can't be too fast. Speaking of bringing in, what can you do to change it? They did add a new rule to the safety car this year's this race as well. The Verstappen rule, as people have come to know it, which is that you cannot be driving up the inside of someone and looking in their wing mirror like Luigi in that Mario Kart meme during the safety car. You need to stay behind the other car. Do not drive up beside them, which is what Verstappen was obviously doing to Hamilton at the end of last season a lot, and you know, the last lap of the race. But obviously he did it with Leclerc a couple of times this year, so he was a good boy this time. Although I will say he was right up his tailpipe.
Take us through the restart.
Yeah, I mean, like Rob said, Leclerc sort of had a bit of a wobble coming out of that final turn, and almost like he missed the apex, but it sounds like, yeah, he just had cold tires and wasn't able. He sort of put on the accelerator, wasn't turning, had to lift off slightly, which when you're entering a start-finish straight is like the kiss of death, because you miss that little bit of RPM at the start and you're going to feel it by the time you get down to the end of the straight. So Verstappen had a good run on him leading up into that first turn, but ultimately the Ferraris just had the pace this week, and they were able to fight off the Red Bulls in a way that they weren't at Jeddah. You know, like Jeddah was a real Max just needs to get all the components right so that he's close enough on the straight and he'll get it done. But qualifying, practice qualifying, and in the race, like on a you know, mano-a-mano situation, the Ferraris were able to hold their own even with Leclerc bogged down. So he retains his lead, and as we have seen in the first stint, we'll see again, he manages that gap pretty well. He gets a couple of seconds ahead fairly quickly at a DRS zone. Verstappen doesn't even seem to be able to get that close to him.
Yes, and by lap 36, Perez has made it back up into fourth and is now challenging George Russell for third, and makes pretty quick work of him with DRS. So now it is Leclerc in first, Verstappen in second, Perez in third, Russell in fourth, Hamilton in fifth.
And Mercedes also basically told Russell to stop fighting it. Which was also like, so where's Mercedes head at right now? Russell was starting to try and was kind of fending off Perez, but it did seem like Perez had all the pace, particularly in straight line. Like when on the straights, like every time the Red Bull took a run in a Mercedes, it sort of felt like almost the inversion of last year, and the inversion of what we're used to seeing with the Merc, where the Merc always just like gobbles up the straights. Yeah. Here, it just seemed like, you know, you'd almost like see Perez like shooting the harpoon into the Mercedes and just like dragging it back.
And it was like 20 laps left, so you're like, he's not gonna, you know.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna hold it.
He's just ruining his tires.
Yeah. Right, and Merc hopped on the radio and was like, hey, so if you're compromising your tires to hold on to the position, that's a net loss for us. We would rather if you were jeopardizing pace for position, then that is not the strategy we want to be running. And you know, Russell's like, that's not what I wanted to hear. But you know, didn't put up too all out of defense against Perez. I don't think he could have. Like, I just don't think there was pace there to do it in the first place. But certainly seemed content to drop back into third place and just sort of keep the pace there.
Well, all of that changes because a few laps later, as Verstappen pulls over on lap 39 with an apparent fuel problem for his second DNF, which stands for did not finish, by the way, if you're hearing that and don't know what that means. Second DNF in three races.
Yeah. Stop the car, please. So this sounds like it was something that they were aware of pre-race, because he came on the radio and said, I smell some weird fluid. Everything is, and I think he cursed or something, or everything is not right.
Was that early in the race, or was that right around the time that he pulled
over?
No,
this was right before the incident. And then his race engineer comes on and says, stop the car, Max, stop the car, Max. So I'm wondering if this was something that they...
He also got a fail sensor early in the race.
Oh, he did. So maybe then is when they had it. But it sounded like the type of, like, you know, Red Bull, if there's something wrong with the car, they'll eke it out just to see if, you know, there's something they can do, or if, you know, how many times have we seen Max trundle around an extra lap because they're trying to fix a problem with the car? But the difference between this one was they immediately told him to pull over, and he immediately got out of the car.
And he immediately was very much on fire.
Yes, he was. The back of the car, he was ushering over
also,
the
that guy was so slow. Did you catch this moment of, like, just the most casual trackside marshal, like, response with the fire? Like, if I'm Max, I'm losing, like, I'm ripping it out of that guy's hands, because, like, Max is trying to be like, hey, the car is on fire. And we now know, especially with, like, cost cap stuff, like, that fire, you literally, like, just see billows of, like, euro
money
pouring out of it.
Like, the ashes, if you zoom in on the ashes, it's all lira.
And so why are you sauntering over here with the fire extinguisher? My car is burning down 3 feet away from me. Just get it in there. It was, like, I was
hard to see, maybe, you know.
Yeah, I was Australian daylight. I was having a bit of a fit watching it, because it was very stressful. But yeah, it did seem like they knew something was maybe off with that from the start. And then, you know, when Perez asked, like, hey, what happened with Max, they were immediately like, not relevant to us. So it seems like they had an inkling that, like, there was something up, and if it failed, it would like fail in exactly the way Max experienced it.
Yes, a few laps later, we've got a scrap between Bottas and Stroll for ninth place. Stroll does some weaving down the front straight and earns himself a 5-second penalty. And just to recap that, if you are in front, you're allowed to make one defensive move and then rejoin the racing line. You're not allowed to just weave back and forth and block the person behind.
Yeah. Wouldn't be much overtaking an F1 if that happened. He'd also forced Bottas off the end of turn three, I guess it was. I think he sort of just didn't give him enough space either. So
dove down the inside, kind of shoved Bottas off the track. That also allowed Gasly to come through. Gasly though has his own trip onto the grass on lap 55, allowing Bottas to repass him for 10th place. Mm. And as the race comes to a close, Alex Albon in seventh place is racing on the same hard tires he started the race with.
Yeah.
And in fact, does not pit until he has only one lap to go, comes out in 10th place, and fends off Zhou Guan Yu to finish in the points in a Williams, having started 20th.
Amazing. What a job. Lots of eyes on whether or not he was going to pull a Schumacher and just serve his required... I mean, that was a penalty, I think, was it, for Schumacher? But to serve his required entry to the pit stop on the final lap, just hope that your pit box is past the start-finish straight. But there is a rule now that you have to trigger a sensor that is on the pit lane exit if you're doing any of those things for any of your pits to count. So he was not able to do that. I wonder what would have happened if he hadn't served it. Would he have gotten a 5, a 10?
They must have calculated. I think under the new regime, they might have given him whatever the equivalent of the chair is.
Just like DQ. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome for him, though. Get Latifi out of that car, for God's sake. Maybe not as bad as we think.
That was great to see. But Charles Leclerc wins the Australian Grand Prix, also gets the fastest lap at the last moment which, by the way, if he had not done that, the one who would have gotten it would have been Fernando Alonso.
Wow.
Yes, down there in 17th place.
Fernando,
so he wouldn't have gotten the point, but Leclerc would have been denied it.
Fernando was like on for a podium this weekend. That car, dude, was,
I think those Alpines are real. They're not. Yeah. I haven't hooked it all up yet, but I think they're. I think them and McLaren might be a battle.
But it's so hard to tell, right? Because McLaren are like, McLaren's car is a totally different car this weekend. Haas's car is a totally different car for all the wrong reasons this weekend.
Right, them and McLaren seemed like they flipped.
Yeah, it was felt like last year suddenly, again. Like, what happened here? And then in the interviews with Lando afterwards, like, he was still saying, if that's the same car that was in Bahrain, like, that, like the track suited us here. The car is the same. We haven't changed the car. It's just we're able to run a strategy that works on this track. We don't have one for the other ones. So it's mad to think that, like, we tracks have always had, you know, favored certain teams because of the length of straights often or the amount of turns or something, but not to the degree we're looking at McLaren, where they're like competitive, you know, at the top of the top end of the top 10 to being completely in no man's land in other tracks. It's really, I fantasy, whoever wins fantasy F1 this year, it's just like, has the luck of the Irish or something. It's just like not, I can't see how you can predict very much, especially with the reliability stuff also, you know, kind of unevenly really hurting Red Bull. They're just kind of lucky that Ferrari had a bad weekend with Sainz, that they're not even further back at the constructors.
I wonder if it's like, you know, if I think about like tracks like Bahrain and sort of the Tilkadrome design, a lot of them have like technical sections and at least like one or two show-stopping hard turns in them. And we do know that, like, with the new tire regulations and everyone complaining about understeer, it has been cranking, like, you know, effectively F1 cars, there's like three categories of turn that like basically interact completely differently with the car, and one of them is like the really hard slow corner. And I think with these changes, Melbourne just doesn't have those kind of corners as much as it used to. It used to have very hard ones. That last corner before the start finish straight was, you know, basically a full like come to a complete halt, make an orderly left turn. And so I do wonder
turn three
if, like,
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I do wonder if the reprofiling
and six. Yeah.
Yeah, where there's things these cars were either struggling or handling really well. In like Bahrain and Jeddah, that like just wasn't an issue here, but will be like at most of the other courses. But yeah, it is really perplexing when you see this sort of like complete inversion of how the teams were doing, and they don't have any. There is no new part, no new change that they can point to.
The one team though that you could say clearly has made gains and is Mercedes, and you're wondering now if they are going to start again. It could be the track. It could be this track favors them a little bit more as well. If they don't like the slow speed corners, it's mitigated here. We'll see it again in Imola though. But I do wonder if they've closed that gap. The question is on, have Ferrari and Verstappen lost out on some good early momentum?
I don't know that I agree, because what I will say is if Alonso doesn't have such a tough weekend, both in qualifying and in the race, I think he's up there. He might be up there with the Red Bulls and Ferraris even. Mm. And so you imagine the Mercs being like moved down one. If Max doesn't retire, then you're once again like squarely mid to back of the top 10 positions. I think like Mercedes is in real trouble here, unless they can come to grips with it. And I think they need to, because again, the car looks like an absolute nightmare to drive.
Well, let's run down the rest of the results here. Rounding out the podium, Sergio Perez in second, and George Russell hangs on for third. Behind him, Lewis Hamilton, Lando Norris in fifth, Daniel Ricciardo in sixth. Finally, a decent home race.
Yeah.
For Danny Ric.
Yeah.
Esteban Ocon in seventh, Valtteri Bottas in eighth, Pierre Gasly in ninth, Alex Albon, the last points paying position, in 10th, ahead of Zhou Guanyu, Lance Stroll, Mick Schumacher, Kevin Magnussen, Yuki Tsunoda in 15th, then Nicholas Latifi and Fernando Alonso, the last of the runners, and Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, and Carlos Sainz, all DNFs. Okay, well, in the Drivers' Championship, Charles Leclerc has a commanding lead in first, 71 points, 34 points ahead of second place George Russell. That's right.
Who only has one
second
podium,
place
right?
in the championship.
I think
you're right.
Two. This makes two.
Is it two?
Oh, okay.
Because the podium at Spa last year.
Oh, no. I meant this year. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, his first with Mercedes. But yes, you're right, of course. How dare you call it a podium?
Look, I'm happy for him. But like,
those were two
mistakes were made.
Laps, Rob.
George Russell is in second with 37 points, 4 points ahead of Carlos Sainz. In fourth place, Sergio Perez, who has jumped four spots. He's got 30 points. And then Lewis Hamilton in fifth. Max Verstappen all the way down in sixth place. DNFs will do that for you.
It's the old adage in to finish in first, you got to finish. Like the reliability stuff, like look what happens to Verstappen there where he is. Yeah. And Russell in second is another, you know, sign of that. Like just finish the races at this stage and you'll get those points. It'll all add up.
Yeah. It's true. I think there have been F1 championships. Was KK Rosberg one of them that never won a race that season?
Surprise.
In seventh place in the Drivers' Championship, Esteban Ocon, who was 4 points ahead of Lando Norris, who jumps up two spots into eighth place. Kevin Magnussen and Valtteri Bottas are tied with 12. And Danny Ric is on the board with 8 points in 11th place. Then we've got Pierre Gasly, Yuki Tsunoda, Fernando Alonso, Zhou Guan Yu in 15th place, tied with Alex Albon. And then the zero pointers, Sebastian Vettel, Nico Hülkenberg, Lance Stroll, Mick Schumacher, and Nicholas Latifi.
Keke won one race that year. That's okay. Crazy. But out of like, you know, I think it's 12.
16 or
something. Came second twice, third once, retired from three, and disqualified from one and still won the championship. Wow. He got a lot of fifth and fourth places. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's the Rosberg magic. Well, let's take it to the news, fellas. Danny, you want to kick us off here?
Yeah, there's some drama with Vegas. It looks like it's embroiled in a lawsuit. I don't think much is going to come of this, but it is quite funny. It's sort of like the ghost of the undying Bernie Eccleston haunting F1 a little bit. So apparently there is an ongoing lawsuit. They knew about this when they announced Vegas, that basically Bernie Eccleston had done a sort of a secret handshake with this guy, Farid Sidfar, who is a Las Vegas businessman. Who's a partner in the firm P2M Motorsports, or sorry, his partner rather, Chad Christensen, that they think that they basically had the rights to do the Vegas race. And Liberty Media is like, that's just the letter. That's not a contract. We don't have to care about that.
Is this in crayon?
Yeah. So I think it's a letter from Bernie in 2013 that he said appointed him to put together an operation to be the promoter for the Las Vegas Grand Prix. So that's a settlement that or a lawsuit that will most likely be settled and we'll never hear about it again. But it just is quite funny. It is the type of stuff that you would expect would happen with a Las Vegas Grand Prix. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right. Couple stories here for Rob. Rob, what can you tell us?
Yeah, well, you noticed this one, and it's good when we talked about some of these issues around F1 logistics costs having effectively exploded in this year, and already started putting pressure on the teams. But yeah, apparently there was a real risk that a number of teams were not going to get their cars shipped into Melbourne until very, very late. Wow. In the race prep process, and so they basically had to have DHL's vice president of motorsport logistics, according to an article by Jonathan Noble over at Autosport, the vice president of motorsport logistics, which it's kind of amazing that position exists within a company, but it makes sense. Flew out to Singapore to basically offload a bunch of F1 freight from the ships they were on and have them flown directly to Melbourne. But they, you know, he was sort of talking, you know, in this piece about how, like, some of this is just how tight the supply and timing of these containers has gotten. You know, he said, you know, there's a quote from him in here saying there's almost a bidding war right now, rates from Europe to Asia to Europe that we're pitching about $900 a container are now about $20,000.
Oh my God.
Which is just absolutely absurd. And so, like, this is kind of what the teams are up against. Now, there isn't, you know, coming from DHL, I suspect there's a bit of a "we're all trying to find the guy who did this" quality to this quote, because from what I understand, basically what people are being made to bid against is the net profit that running a ship from China to the west coast of the U.S. effectively, that's what is happening, is that, like, okay, you can almost imagine a giant magnet pulling all the containers and shipping resources of the world into the China to west coast trade route, and you're having to bid hard to get any, like, freight earmarked for running other routes because there's so much profit in that connection. But, like, the magnet in this case is kind of the logistics companies who were like, we would rather run empty containers back to China direct from the West Coast rather than have them do what they've normally done, which is sort of circulate around the global trade network. So, like, it's cool that, like, DHL is doing this concierge service, but it also does kind of indicate the massive, like, distortion that exists in that industry right now. Speaking of distortions, maybe. So Toto Wolff is never going to stop being mad about Michael Massey, but he gave this interview just basically making sure that, you know, it's time to do another drive-by on Michael Massey. And maybe this makes sense because, like, I think Michael Massey is an Australian, and so maybe this comes up because people are asking about that relationship. But he gave an interview, again, this is Autosport, but apparently the interview came with Press Association. So I assume this is it's italicized at Autosport, which makes it sound like an outlet, but I do wonder if that more means like the F1 media. Either way, some odd details. So Wolf talks about right before Abu Dhabi that he had lunch. He says, it is quite interesting because I had lunch with Massey on the Wednesday before the race. And I said to him, I really want to tell you, without patronizing you, that you need to take criticism on board and develop from there. Lewis does it every day, but you are the guy who always seems to know better. Explained Wolf. It wasn't about influencing, but really giving my honest feedback that he shouldn't block outside opinion as simply being wrong. Good meeting, Toto. This was, yeah. I think that was absolutely the message you wanted to pass along to the F1 race director before the final race of the season where you're tied.
Yeah. He clearly took it on board, let's just say.
But then some of these quotes, so Wolf also says, and I haven't heard these from other sources, so I'm curious if this is corroborated from anywhere else. Again, this is Wolf talking about Massey's reputation. You hear from the drivers and how the drivers' briefings were conducted by Massey, and some of the guys said it was almost disrespectful how he treated some of them. There's a promoter of one of the races in the Middle East who said he was so relieved Massey had gone because he got so much abuse from him. He was just immune to any feedback, and even today it's not properly reflected that he did something wrong. He was a liability for the sport because everybody kept talking about Abu Dhabi and the race director. And the race director should not be somebody that people talk about. And in contrast to this, he's like, you know, the new management under Niels Wittig and Eduardo Freitas, nothing but praise, except for the fact that they're already running afoul of the drivers because they issued some sort of, like, I think maybe the driver's briefing, they were like, hey, you guys need to start wearing your fireproof underwear.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, they don't have fireproof underwear. They're not talking about the fire suits that the guys are wearing, which they all do wear. They're talking about, like, your boxer briefs should be, like, fireproof. And the drivers are like, do they even make fire? Like, is that a thing? Like, none of them have heard about it, so they're all kind of, like, perplexed by this. And then the new director's like, and by the way, there's been a ban on body piercings and jewelry since 2004.
Right.
So we'll be in a grace period, but you guys need to sort it out.
This is some real new principle shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And like Hamilton's just, like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, sorry.
What's
I'm
the
not.
Fine?
Well, apparently some of his earrings are like welded in. Like he can't take them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, like, I mean, you can see the danger there. Like in most sports, they want you to take things out because you'll get caught on something. I could see an F1 it being heat, fire related, but also like if it's on his face, he's got like a bloody $10,000 helmet on. So I don't know, like what
the,
you know.
And again, the rules. This is classic racial politics shit, where it's like, you know what? You know what we're gonna do? We're gonna grab hold of that third rail here. And we're gonna really seize it. It's time to
Hoodies too. We're gonna get rid of hoodies. They send the wrong impression.
Yeah, there's could you know. I mean, it is true.
Let's have all the girls wear skirts again. Let's get you.
It's almost like the rules could use an update.
Yeah, and it is true that like in any place where you like have people operating heavy machinery, there are restrictions on what like jewelry you can have. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, big loopy necklaces are obviously a no-go for a whole bunch of reasons.
I've known people who have had horrific.
If you worked anywhere near an assembly line, you've heard stories about, you know, that harmless piece of jewelry that you don't think could possibly hurt you.
Yes. I almost stopped wearing rings entirely after one of those.
Stop it. I'm going to pass out.
Not good.
So like it is true that these sort of regulations like don't come from nowhere, but I do agree that like in this case, it kind of seems targeted on one driver. And the piercings in question are, yes, they are encased inside a incredibly expensive mandatory like helmet. And so it seems like we can let this one go as we have for like a decade at this point.
Mm.
Well, I forgot to read the constructor standing, so let me do that right now. Ferrari is on top, big surprise, with 104 points. Mercedes in second with 65 to Red Bull's 55 in third. McLaren is in fourth with 24. Alpine in fifth with 22. Then we jump down to sixth place. Alfa Romeo has 13. Haas has 12. AlphaTauri has 10. Williams has 1, thanks to Alex Albon. And in 10th place, Aston Martin.
Terrific. Good on Williams. Good on Albon.
Yeah. If you would like to join your own standings, you can join our fantasy league using the link in the show notes. Here are the top three from Australia. Tie for second between Simon C. from Australia with the team House of Haas, spelled the German, H-A-U-S. Tied with Joseph from America with Team One.
Joseph. Very good.
And then on top, from Australia, or in Australia, from America, Nathan with his team, Starin McLaren.
Beautiful.
Yes, well, but overall, we have a two-way tie for third place between Aaron from Canada, his team, Guan Yu Feel the Love Tonight.
Oh, I love it. Every time.
Mm-hmm. We've got SH from America with their team, Red Means Fast. And then in second place, Morgan from the UK. Leclerc and 9 to 5.
Oh.
I can't wait to say these all season.
They're terrific.
So
yeah, I'm just holding back my singing.
And then we've got from
parts unknown.
It's not showing me the tooltip hover is not. I think this is Norway.
Okay.
It just has the flag. It is black, or I'm sorry, it is red with a blue cross on it. Krister.
Is there white around the blue?
Yes.
Yes, that's Norway.
Great. Krister's team, Yinwas Discipler.
Is that Norwegian?
Probably.
Okay.
I hope I'm not saying anything bad. They are on top overall in the Shift F1 Fantasy League.
Jenwas Discipler.
That's right.
I agree.
You can also...
Norwegian race. You could say that at the top of the podcast.
That's right. You can also email us, shiftf1podcast@gmail.com or f1.cool/emails. You can also hit us up on Twitter at shiftf1podcast. I am at Drew Scanlon. That is at Danny O'Dwyer and at Rob Zachney. That's us around the internet. Should we take it around the world of racing, Danny?
Let's race around the world. Yeah.
Well... Guess what?
What?
The Camping World Trucks are back!
My beautiful boys. My beautiful big boys.
Yes, at Bristol Motor Speedway for the Pinties Truck Race on Dirt.
Oh, they're doing it again.
Yes.
Awesome.
The dirt race is back.
Dirt apocalypse.
At the Bristol Motor Speedway.
Talk yes. about track evolution over a weekend.
Boy, not a lot of racing going on this weekend. Maybe because it's Easter Sunday.
And because it was a Super banquet
GT.
Last week.
What's that?
And because it was such a banquet last week.
Yeah.
That's true. I, by the way, forgot to mention that there was an IndyCar race.
Mm. Long Beach.
And it was yes, in Long Beach. Was good. I think people noted that we have to assume that Roman Grosjean is a listener of the show.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
The Phoenix, you mean? The Phoenix.
Yeah, the Phoenix. And I'd said some harsh things about the Phoenix and like his form this year. And he battled back and turned in a really terrific performance at Long Beach. Ended up second, was battling for the lead there behind Joseph Newgarden. But it was another. Nice. Absolute banger of an Indy race. Like, Indy is in an incredible place right now. I can't stress enough how good IndyCar is. And Grosjean also appears to be in a pretty good place, at least for that weekend.
Great. Well, we've got Super GT at the Okoyama International Circuit on Sunday in the town of Mimasaka.
Oh, yeah?
Okoyama Prefecture.
Oh, love Okoyama.
Japan. And we got NASCAR.
Where are we going?
We're also at Bristol.
Dirt.
Racing
in the
dirt.
Dirt.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to clean up the dirt for us in between sessions.
Not sure this is a good mix, but it's the Food City dirt race.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Somebody didn't call the other side of the sales office, and they're like, oh, shit. Damn it.
By the way, did I see something that, like, there's another fist fight in NASCAR
was there?
Over last weekend? I saw a video of a couple drivers, one in it. I guess not much of a fight. You don't get many points for being all like in a helmet and then punching somebody in the face while
yeah,
you're wearing
I've been
a helmet.
Punched by somebody wearing biker gloves and a helmet, and I wasn't. And it was not fair.
Yeah.
So if there's two people doing it to each other, it's just kind of like.
Yeah, but in this case, it was one guy helmet off, and then one guy helmet on, and keeps punching the guy without the helmet. And like to me, in addition to we probably shouldn't have fist fights in Gasoline Alley in the first place, but like also if you're gonna do it, don't be a punk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool. I see it here. Yeah. Oh yeah. A couple of little sort of straight rights there between Ty Gibbs and Sam Mayer. Oh, cool.
I guess I'll find that and put it in the show notes.
Yeah. I'll link it to you.
Well, next week we will be back for the pre-Imola show.
Yes.
But until then, final thoughts, Danny.
I know less about this year or whatever you race. It's just, it seems like there's no consistent. The only consistent thing is the Ferraris are fast. And they're still fast. So, you know. Great year for the Tifosi, and you can't say they haven't waited a long time for it.
It's true. This is the biggest lead that the championship leader has had since the start of the 2021 season. So this larger lead than anyone had that season. Final thoughts, Rob?
The story I can't take my eyes off of is Aston Martin under the stewardship of Lawrence Stroll and his handpicked cabal of McLaren castoffs. This is not a good start for this whole. By some measures, you took a perfectly good, successful F1 racing program that had punched above its weight for years, and you fucked it all up.
What did Otmar do when he walked out?
Yeah, I don't know. Did he like spike the engines or something? Like, okay, Lance, I know we've had a lot of good conversations about what you should do as a driver, but here are my parting instructions. It's time to really suck. So get to it. I don't know. It is very funny that this is the way things are going. And, you know, with the lag time in F1, maybe like Omar had already made some of these mistakes and like a decline in performance was coming. And that was like why he was kind of ending up on the outs. But just in terms of like, you know, what we call the optics of how this is all working out, like Omar leaves, Alpine's got kind of this like, wow, that team's got some moves now. They're coming along. And meanwhile, like literally Aston is just into the wall.
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, we shall see next week. If you would like to support the show and get access to all of our bonus episodes and the official Shift F1 Discord, you could do so over at patreon.com/ShiftF1. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.
Yeah.